Hey, this is Elizabeth.
This is Keisha.
Hi, this is Leslie Sullivan, and welcome to the Mustard Seed Podcast.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the table. We are all here today, this morning. It's morning for us. I don't know when you guys are all listening to it, but it's morning for us.
I think this is the first time we've ever done it in the morning.
It is.
I think so.
Trying to figure out if it's a good or bad decision on our end. How much coffee have we had? How many potty breaks are we going to have to take because of said coffee? And that might, when I say we, I mean me. So we'll make it. So you might hear a little more chickens in the background than normal, because usually we're out here and it's darker, so they're sleeping.
They're asleep. Not today.
No, but yeah, I mean, it's good. It's a beautiful morning. At least the sun's out over here. I don't know about where you are, Leslie, but the sun's here. But we are going to look at continuing. We're going to continue with Ruth, and so we're going to look at Ruth 3 and 4 today. Like I said, it's a little different on how we did this woman of the Bible, because she has her own book.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of combined the two. So it's the woman of the Bible, but we're still going through the actual book of Ruth, because I feel like it's important to highlight the entire book and not just her, because since her whole story is at least in here written down for us all, I think it's important.
She's a pretty important gal.
She is, yes.
Okay. Ruth 3. One day, Naomi said to Ruth, "My daughter, it's time that I found a permanent home for you so that you will be provided for. Boaz is a close relative of ours, and he's been very kind by letting you gather grain with his young women. Tonight, he will be winnowing barley at the threshing floor. Now do as I tell you. Take a bath and put on perfume and dress in your nicest clothes. Then go to the threshing door, but don't let Boaz see you until he has finished eating and drinking. Be sure to notice where he lies down. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down there. He will tell you what to do." "I will do everything you say," Ruth replied. So she went down to the threshing floor that night and followed the instructions of her mother-in-law. After Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he lay down at the far end of the pile of grain and went to sleep. Then Ruth came quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. Around midnight, Boaz suddenly woke up and turned over. He was surprised to find a young woman laying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I am your servant, Ruth," she replied. "Spread the corner of your covering over me, for you are my family redeemer." "The Lord bless you, my daughter," Boaz exclaimed. "You are showing even more family loyalty now than you did before, for you have not gone after a younger man, whether rich or poor. Now, don't worry about a thing, my daughter. I will do what is necessary, for everyone in town knows you are a virtuous woman. But while it's true that I am one of your family redeemers, there is another man who is more closely related to you than I am. Stay here tonight, and in the morning I will talk to him. If he is willing to redeem you, very well, let him marry you. But if he is not willing, then as surely as the Lord lives, I will redeem you myself. Now lie down here until morning." So Ruth lay at Boaz's feet until the morning. But she got up before it was light enough for people to recognize each other, for Boaz had said no one must know that a woman was here at the threshing floor. Then Boaz said to her, "Bring your cloak and spread it out." He measured 6 scoops of barley into the cloak and placed it on her back. Then he returned to town. When Ruth went back to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "What happened, my daughter?" Ruth told Naomi everything Boaz had done for her, and she added, "He gave me these 6 scoops of barley and said, go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed." Oh, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed, sorry. Then Naomi said to her, "Just be patient, my daughter, until we hear what happens. The man won't rest until he has settled things today."
I just keep hearing Fiddler on the Roof. Matchmaker, matchmaker, yeah, make me literally a match.
I think it's such an interesting custom from that time, too, of how, I don't know, it was betrothed to each other.
Yeah.
Kind of concepts. How they decided who would marry who and
yeah,
all those things. Very just interesting to my brain.
Me too. Because it's not a love match. It's really just they're matched out of convenience, out of need, out of what's best for the family. But yeah. When I read Ruth, I think of it feels like a love match. Like there's definitely some liking going on there.
Some attraction.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit of both. I like the Leviticus laws here where you have that redeemer and you have that, that support that helps the people that are in need like that. So that way your family's not destitute after you've lost, you know, so much. And I think that's a great part.
Yeah. Sorry.
But the threshing floor was interesting for like Naomi to send Ruth to, because in Israel during that season the threshing floor was linked with a lot of little sexual activity would be going on there, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's why Boaz was so much like, don't let anyone know you were actually here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then it looks like you're not that virtuous woman. You're not that lady that we want everyone to know that you are, yes. You know.
It's like Naomi kind of set her up a little bit to look a little. It's like almost
I almost wonder, obviously, hopefully, in theory, Naomi knew exactly the structure of how it would go down, right? Like, of the timing of everything.
Yeah.
Because she was such an observant person in that aspect. But yeah, I mean, it could have gone either way.
No, 100%.
I would imagine it'd be pretty nerve-wracking to be in Ruth going there alone at night, because I mean she could have easily been attacked if she was seen,
right?
Makes me think of walking downtown in a city at night by yourself.
Yeah. Makes me think, gosh, I gotta find that reference I found. Anyway.
Well, that too, but as far as, like, I mean, obviously Naomi is orchestrating this whole thing, but she's also giving Ruth a little bit of permission to kind of move on. Because likely Ruth was still wearing her mourning clothes from losing her spouse. And Naomi's like, you're going to change your clothes. Like, we're going to, this is what you're going to put on. Like, it's okay. We're done.
Yeah.
You know, we have mourned. We are, you know, it's like almost like God's moving in Naomi as well. Like, we're going to be okay. We're moving on. We've properly mourned, you know, those that we've lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Naomi's practical too, because, you know, they're barely making it. They're just living off of what they can glean. And so I think she sees it as a opportunity for both of them as well.
Yeah.
It's so I found this. Where does this? Anyway, it's talking about there's certain things about the Book of Ruth, obviously, but it talks about how it kind of reestablishes. It says the Book of Ruth helps redefine family by focusing on love and loyalty rather than just blood relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's evident in how Boaz treats Ruth, obviously, in this scenario, is that if there is a better one out there for you, I will make that happen. If there's not, then I will, you know,
I will
redeem you. And I just think it's one of those things that we talk about all the time, at least in my world, that your family defines you. But your family is more than just, I mean, I'm blessed by great blood relations. Like, that's the reality there, right? I'm blessed by that. But my family is way bigger than just those that I came into the world with, my sisters and that. I mean, I'm blessed by a great family of friends to be in faith with and in journey with and all those kinds of things. And I think that's what's neat about it, because obviously Ruth is obviously early on in the Old Testament. It's neat to see that established so early on in everything, even though it's shown even in like the Joseph story and in, you know, other things like that. But it just feels more prominent more in Ruth. I don't know.
No, I agree. It's definitely a nice chosen family over blood relations. So I always thought about this being an odd thing, and I had looked it up, I think, when we talked about Ruth during the women's group, because we had talked about her pretty early on. I think we started with James in women's group, and then we went to Ruth, because I like both of those books. James, I mean, for obvious reasons, he's my favorite. But, you know, the uncovering, like, Naomi tells Ruth to uncover his feet. Like, I've always, like, why feet? I don't understand. I sleep with my feet out anyway, so I don't know. Yeah. Like, what is that supposed to symbolize?
Like, but not a lot to uncover there.
Right? Like, it's not, I'm like, is it supposed to mean something else? Is this just the Bible kind of making it sound a lot more G-rated than other things? Like, what's going on? But the uncovering of the feet is something that, you know, would have brought his attention to something being amiss. Like, somebody else was there without actually, like, physically shaking him. This was like a gentle way for him to be woken up, and then she lays at his feet for submission, like, mm-hmm. just to kind of show that she's literally throwing herself into, like,
at his feet, yeah.
Yeah, at his feet, like, hey, you do with me as you will, but please please do it nicely, I guess. I don't, you know, I mean, it's a lot of faith for Ruth to do exactly what Naomi told her to do. Because there's a lot of room for error here if something had gone wrong. If somebody else woke up, if somebody else was already in that room, if somebody happened to see her walking to or from or anything like that, there's a lot of things that could have gone wrong. But clearly God made sure that they didn't. But that's a lot of faith for her to have in Naomi. In Naomi's God, in Boaz, for her to do what she did and feel, I mean, I'm not saying she was comfortable. I don't know. I wouldn't have been comfortable, because that's going out of her comfort zone.
Oh, yeah.
But
I laughingly think about this, too. I'm like, no one wants to lay at my feet. I kick a lot. Like, don't, like, it's total faith, because, like, I mean, I can't imagine having the courage to go do that.
No.
Regardless of any of the other circumstances, it's a bold, bold move.
Yeah. And then I think it shows God's providence, but also their faith in it.
Yeah.
I think they had the faith that they knew that they were doing the right thing and that it would work out. So, which I found very interesting, because, you know, Ruth, you know, prior to them leaving, you know, she followed other gods. And it was only when they was leaving that she was, well, your God would be my God. So, you know, in modern terms, I would think she would be like a little, you know, a baby believer.
Yeah.
But she showed pretty good strong strength and faith.
Yeah. She's got that new believer faith, too. You know, that with God, all things are possible. Sometimes, yeah. I know we've talked about this in the past, I sometimes take that for granted. I know for sure, because I've been a believer my entire life. There's not been a moment that God hasn't been there in my life. So I take a lot of that for granted. Like, oh, he's just there. It's fine. You know, and I have faith. I have faith that he'll do everything. Sometimes my belief isn't always there, you know, when it comes to situations I'm in, whether it's financial, work, kids, anything, you know, it's like, I have faith that God will do what we need to have happen.
Uh-huh.
And God knows what's best. Sometimes I think that I get in God's way, you know, I might not always follow it. So it's going to take longer for God's will to come through because I get in the way. Mm-hmm. But I also know that I've seen Christians that are way newer Christians than me have a much bigger appreciation and a much bigger faith and are able to hand everything over to him faster than I am.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's like they have the fire.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of, it can wane at different times, and it comes back, you know. But, you know, especially that very beginning fire that you can get.
It's that leaving a conference, like a Christian conference, fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
It's why I tend to do things like our big national youth gathering with our church body and, you know, things like that, because it helps me to see a different perspective than just what I daily, my daily routine, my weekly church routine, this kind of stuff. I get to see faith from a totally different perspective when I go to things like that. Because there's the young kid who got dragged along because his parents wanted him to go, and he has nothing, or she has nothing to, like, I don't care about God. And by the end of it, they've had that moment, right, where God became real to them.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. It's that childlike faith, right? Talk about with our preschoolers all the time. Like, I watch them on the playground and I go, oh, man, look at the joy and like the everything of their day. Let's go. Okay. Thank you, Lord, for showing that to me today, because I can get through my junk today.
Right. You know, we went to Winter Jam last weekend, and, you know, Steve went, it was us, one of our other friends, their husband, you know, and all of our kids. And so it was great to kind of watch my kids do that. Jackson is so me, though. Like, he's so introverted. He didn't know what to do, you know, like, at a concert. They've never really been to a concert. So Jackson was like, yeah, this is awesome. But he wasn't like
outwardly showing it.
Yeah, he was. They talked about it the whole time. Like, they're, oh, that was so awesome. It was great. But both, like, Mylan was into it but they do a lot of that in children still. Like, he's still young enough. But Jackson was just like bobbing his head, like he's too cool for school. But, you know, I stood back when one of the artists was going, and I really like him. He's a rapper. But, and I looked at Steve and I was like, look at all the kids in this arena right now that are singing along with this guy, that are raising their hands, that are praising God. I said, this is why Christian music needs to evolve with every generation.
Yeah.
Yep. By the time they get to be our age, they're going to appreciate a lot more of that worship and a lot more of that. You know, your heart needs to, your soul needs to sing out a lot of the stuff that happens. Yep. But when you have these younger artists singing, you can see that it's speaking to these kids.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, and I know I've said it before where it's still not, it is different than, you know, some of our worship music. And sometimes it's even different than the Christian music we listen to at their age.
Yeah.
They don't get to have DC Talk or Jars of Clay or Newsboys as much.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Skillet was around when I was younger still, but
yeah.
You know, even then, it's still, you still need that soulful, heartfelt stuff. And I mean, they have stuff, people like Brandon Lake still for stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they're still young and cool and hip. But, you know, I said, this is exactly why it's important for these kids to see this. And it's encouraging.
It is. And, you know, for us too, because it, like you said, it was pretty cool seeing everyone jumping up and down while he was rapping and, you know, we Skillet. I mean, everyone was getting into it. Except my 5-year-old.
Yeah.
he fell asleep.
Flat asleep. It was so loud. And I'm like, I don't know.
In the
know
middle
how
of Skillet.
Yeah. That's awesome. I don't know.
Flames shooting up, and he's like,
almost like a bomb's going up. They had like the noise bombs, and he's just sleeping. Like, oh my gosh. It was adorable.
Yeah. I remember it. So Skillet used to play at Disney's Night of Joy every year. And they were the midnight show at Disney's Night of Joy. And so it was fireworks at the castle and Skillet and all this kind of stuff. And there were kids in strollers sleeping. I was like, what are you doing, children? but if you're tired, you're tired.
Right. I wish.
The music's still seeping into your body.
No, right. I wish I could sleep like that.
Man,
I
was
can't.
Out.
Shoot. I'm like, if my band's not kicking out some noise and covering up other random noises, I'm not sleeping.
But he did. I mean, like, literally shooting flames and stuff. At the very end, there was a loud boom, and he woke up then.
Okay, well, there you go. He was alive, so that's good.
It was hilarious, though.
It's too funny. love it. He just knew who he was. He didn't need to. He doesn't need fireworks to know his faith.
No. He's like, I have shown my faith enough. This is the last people. I'm good to go. I'm gonna go to bed now.
Let's go to sleep now, people.
He watched half the set though, but you could tell he's like I am ready for bed.
him and Adley was keeping each other up for a little bit, but he went.
That's awesome.
Ruth 3:2, it's something, again, we're talking about faith. So it ends in Naomi saying, now we just have to wait. We have to be patient. Mm-hmm.
And the whole patient thing.
Exactly. It's like, like, you guys remember, like, I'm sure. And I remember when I make myself remember what it was like to first date your husband, right? Like, you're like, you were just had to wait to see where this was going to go. You had to wait to see if he was going to call you again or when you were going to see him again. And that was awful. But imagine it here where you're not even, they're not even engaged, betrothed. They just have a kind of relationship, an attraction.
Yeah.
You know, and so now she's like, that could all go down a different path if this other dude decides to redeem her.
Yeah.
Instead of the man that she prefers to redeem her. Like, that's a whole different kind of wait and be patient.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember mine and my husband's first date. He was a texter, and he texted me quite a lot. And he told me he felt like he was getting sick, and I was like, oh, well, that's an excuse, you know? And then he went radio silent that day, and I didn't hear anything. We were supposed to go to date that night, and I was, like, so anxious. I was like, oh, he's decided he don't like me no more. But he had took it off and went home and went to bed, so he'd feel like going out.
Hey.
But, you know, it is just sometimes our anxiety, like, takes a hold.
100%. Yeah. Yep.
We know who's got us, and we know that he will, no matter how it turns out, even if it doesn't turn out the way that we think it will or should. But still, that anxiety is hard to get over.
It is.
I'm not good with the whole patience thing.
Me neither. Nope, I like results right away.
And I'm not the one to pray for it anymore either, because I've learned my lesson to pray for patience.
Yeah.
He's going to put me in the opportunities anyway because he knows I need it. But I don't want to. I don't need him to add extra ones in there.
Let's not bring
because
that to the forefront.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, let's not challenge that thing is what I say.
All right. So we'll just keep moving on to Ruth 4. So it says, Boaz went to the town gate and took a seat there. Just then, the family redeemer he'd mentioned came by, so Boaz came out to him. Come over here and sit down, friend. I want to talk to you. So they sat down together. Then Boaz called 10 leaders from the town and asked them to sit as witnesses. And Boaz said to the family redeemer, you know Naomi, who came back from Moab. She is selling the land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. Thank you very much. It's early enough, and I actually remembered how to say it. I thought I should speak to you about it so you can redeem if you wish. If you want the land, then buy it here in the presence of these witnesses. But if you don't want it, let me know right away because I am next in line to redeem it after you. The man replied, all right, I'll redeem it. Then Boaz told him, of course, you purchased the land from Naomi also requires that you marry Ruth, the Moabite widow. That way she can have children who will carry on her husband's name and keep the land in the family. Then I can't redeem it, the family redeemer replied, because this might endanger my own estate. You redeem the land. I cannot do it. Now, in those days, it was custom in Israel for anyone transferring the right of purchase to remove his sandal and hand it to the other party. This publicly validated the transaction. So the other family redeemer drew off his sandal as he said to Boaz, you buy the land. Then Boaz said to the elders and to the crowd standing there, you are witness that today I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon, And with the land, I have acquired Ruth, the Moabite widow of Mahlon, to be my wife. This way, she can have a son to carry on the family name of her dead husband and to inherit the family property here in his hometown. You were all witnesses today. Then the elders and all the people standing at the gate replied, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make this woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, from whom all the nation of Israel descended. May you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. And may the Lord give you descendants by this young woman who will be like those of our ancestor Perez, and the son of Tamar and Judah." So Boaz took Ruth into his home, and she became his wife. When he slept with her, the Lord enabled her to become pregnant, and she gave birth to a son. Then the women of the town said to Naomi, "Praise the Lord, who has now provided a redeemer for your family. May this child be famous in Israel. May he restore your youth and care for you in your old age, for he is the son of your daughter-in-law who loves you, and he has been better and has been better to you than seven sons." Naomi took the baby and cuddled him to her breast, and she cared for him as if he were her own. The neighbor women said, "Now at least Naomi has her son again," and they named him Obed, and he became the father of Jesse, the grandfather of David. This is the genealogical record of their ancestor Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron was the father of Ram. Ram was the father of Amminadab. Amminadab was the father of Nahashan. Nahashan was the father of Salmon. Salmon was the father of Boaz. Boaz was the father of Obed. Obed was the father of Jesse. And Jesse was the father of David.
You did very good, Woo! Liz.
I have to use my finger, though, because I'm like, I'm always going to, like, move. My eyes go much faster than my mouth when I'm reading. So I have to try to slow it so they kind of are on the same plane.
Amen.
So I think we've talked about it before here. I'm not positive, but the city gates, you know, are just kind of where everything occurred. It was like court.
Mm-hmm.
The city gates were pretty much where all of the upstanding gentlemen were, because they were respected. Like the elders of the town, they were there. That's kind of where they held their court, held their disputes, you know, in that way. And then you kind of, that's where you got any of the news from the outside, the other cities, like the other countries, like everything came there. So if you needed to know something or just kind of wanted an update, that's where you'd go. So it's kind of like the city gates is where it's at.
Yeah.
Be like watching the news now, which I don't do, but it's a personal opinion.
But I think it's funny, like, it's like Boaz kind of put the guy on the spot. Hey, I need to talk to you. Oh, okay, let me get all these elders. Like, what is going on?
So it was speculated that this unnamed possible family redeemer was married with kids. So when he mentions that his inheritance would be at stake, he meant his kids. Because if he gained Ruth and her offspring, that adds in another firstborn.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, it kind of messes with how he would pass everything down once he passes. And I don't think he wanted that responsibility.
And I kind of wonder why. I'm assuming Boaz wasn't married.
I'm assuming he was not, yeah.
But I think I remember reading somewhere that they kind of think he might have been like in his 40s or 50s. So he was, you know, older.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I guess it's just kind of God's providence that everything happened at the time that it happened, when it was supposed to happen. To get the genealogy that was to come.
Mm-hmm. I thought thought it interesting, too, that Boaz was at least kind of cunning enough to understand how to put it to this guy to
get him to say no.
Yeah. Like, at first he's like, here, you can, you're the first in line. Do you want all this land? And he's like, oh, yeah, I'll take that. He's like, okay, yeah, cool. But also, just,
yeah.
So it kind of like he did it almost in a way that showed this man's character, maybe a little bit. I mean, again, we don't know this man's reasons. We don't know why he decided that that wasn't something he wanted to do. Yeah. It could have something to do, again, with the fact that she wasn't, you know, Ruth was a outsider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she wasn't an Israelite. She wasn't a Jew. I mean, she was now, but she, you know, that's not how. So, and I know in that day and age, that was considered, like I said, a curse.
Yeah.
And the last time, that would have been like a curse on their family for them to marry somebody who wasn't, in, you know, of Jewish descent, an Israelite. Whether or not she has adopted that, it just shows that this guy had no idea, A, who she was, which is fine.
Yeah.
He's obviously not supposed to be part of the story other than this. But, you know, it just kind of, you kind of see, like, I want that, but I don't want
that
her.
Yeah.
You know, I want the money, but mainly for my own gain and my kids, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say that had a lot to do with it because she was a foreigner.
Because
mm-hmm. I know our pastors talked before about David's father, Jesse, you know, that it's, I guess, kind of assumed. He had read it in like a
devotional.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That was not coming out of my mouth. Jesse didn't want an eighth son. He had seven sons, which was mm-hmm. completion.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt like their family was cursed because they had foreigners in their genealogy. And
yeah.
And so he didn't really want the eighth son. And he treated David differently than the rest of his sons. And that was to do with Ruth and Rahab.
Mm-hmm.
But Boaz, he had no problem with that.
Nope. It shows God's divine plan too. You know, how when you follow his steps, when you do what he says, the blessings that come from that.
Yeah.
And like, that's hindsight. Like, we can see this now. It's hindsight is huge, you know, but I mean, there's always like that divine circumstances that brought all of us to our spouses, to put us in the areas that we're in, the people that we get to minister to, the people that are just in our circles, you know, that's God's, like, it's by God's design. And, you know, we allow him to work like that. And we're following it so we can kind of see a lot of that come to fruition. We can see the people that God's placed in our lives and how our marriage is blessing us and, you know, the areas that we're all in for a reason.
Yeah.
Well, it's provision, right?
Yeah.
Like he provides the timing and the people and the supplies or the whatever the provision is, right? Like, he just always constantly shows us exactly the path that we're supposed to take. Now, sometimes we're resistant to that path. There's definitely, we push away that provision sometimes or hide it or any version of that, right? But there's just, it's just the constant, like, the patience part, you know, so just be patient, my daughter, from chapter 3 and how we, you know, Ruth, be patient, Ruth, be patient. Like, Ruth is told how many times, just wait.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've got you, you know?
Yeah.
And, I hate that for myself because I suck at it. But that's obviously what the Lord's always trying to teach me, is just sit back, listen, and wait, because I'm going to show you exactly what I have for you.
Yep.
So, even though I want my Oompa Loompa now.
Right? I want it now.
Yes.
Why he caused me to be single till I was 40.
Yeah.
I mean, not that he said, I'm going to make you be single till you're 40, but was I ready for it? Was it the right timing? Was it the right people? Was it I mean, all those parts. I'm not saying God's up there going, you're not till 40, you're not till 30.
Right.
No, like, he's not up there doing that, but he's up there saying, I love you, my child. You're not open. You're not ready.
Yeah.
For Ruth, for Naomi, for Boaz, it was all about what the timing had to be for it to work out the way it's supposed to work out.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
God's timing is way better than ours.
100%.
All the time.
Which is easier said than done.
Yes.
Always. Like, I know that.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean that I like it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we know that Boaz was a wealthy man. God has clearly blessed him, and he is in God's favor just by the way he treats his workers. You see mm-hmm. how good of a man he is and the way he even treats Ruth.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it was said, you know, that he didn't need the field. Right. But he wanted Ruth.
Yeah.
Which is another way that this story can help kind of point to Jesus. You know, if we mention, like, if we go back and you look at the scroll, you know, that was the deed to the land, right? So you go back to Revelations 5:1-5, the qualifications of a redeemer are to be related to the redeemer and to be able to redeem, you know, and being willing to redeem. So it's like you had to have, there was three clauses to being a redeemer, you know, ability, you know, the willingness and the relation, which is why in Revelations, the only one qualified to open the scroll
mm-hmm.
is the one, you know, it is the Lion of Judah, you know, yeah. Jesus. So Jesus qualifies as the world's redeemer because he's related to us because he came down as a human. You know, he is able to because he died for our sins and he wants to.
Yeah.
You know, he's willing to do that. So it just kind of shows just how this story, even though it's a wonderful story of faith and of redemption, it just kind of also still shows how, not only because it's a lineage of Jesus, right? It's in that this is the genealogy, it's part of his ancestry of us here on earth, but it's just also kind of just shows how something in the Old Testament can point still to the ultimate story in the New Testament.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all connected,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty awesome.
And I think it also shows how much that this community in Bethlehem, how they embraced Ruth, because
yeah.
they're putting her on the pedestal with Rachel and Leah.
Yeah.
Right. They're saying, "May she be blessed. May your son be, you know, as prominent." You know, like they're putting in the names that we know just, you know, already just from reading the Old Testament. We understand. And we went over Tamar, so a few months back. So hopefully everybody here also knows, like, they understood that reference of Perez with Tamar, because that
yeah.
was, she has an amazing story. If not, go back and listen to that one. That
yeah.
was one of my favorite episodes. But, you know, I mean, they're putting high praise on this foreign woman's offspring.
Yeah.
Because of the amount of faith that she's shown.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. I mean, because it even says, you know, the women of the neighborhood gave him a name.
Mm-hmm.
And little Miss Naomi, but she was thrilled. She was excited to have yeah. her little grandchild.
Well, because God redeemed her in a way as well. So through Ruth, Naomi mm-hmm. was redeemed.
Yeah. Yeah, because she was very bitter.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, understandably.
Yeah, I think I could feel exactly what she felt yeah. if I went through what she did.
Yeah. It's just. And I think her having Ruth and Ruth having so much faith, you know, because Ruth never questioned anything. She just did.
Mm-hmm. Which is also something I think I can learn from. I question yeah. a lot. that.
I do too. It drives my husband crazy. He's like, oh, why you always question me? Why don't you just do what I say?
Just like that?
Just like that, yeah. I just want to make sure you know what you know.
That's the thing, and one thing I've told a lot of supervisors. Like, listen, I am not subordinate. Like, I am obedient when it comes to you guys providing me direction. I'll do it. But I need you to understand that I'm going to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I don't know why we're doing it this way instead of a different way, or one that I feel like might be a little more efficient, or what the thought process is behind a new thing, I'm not trying to be combative. I'm trying to understand why we're doing it this way.
I always say I'm not seeking to have to make, I don't need to be the decision maker. I don't have to be the only person who has influence, but I'm seeking to understand what you're doing.
Yeah.
So that I can do it along with you, support you, do the same thing, whatever it is. But if I don't understand it, you need to explain it to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I know sometimes my questions sound like I'm challenging. I'm like, I'm not challenging you. I need clarification, and I need to understand why you're about to have me do what you're having me do. And maybe it's because I have trust issues too. So I need to understand that there's not something hidden in the shadows reasoning as why they're asking me to do something or not asking me to do it, you know?
Yeah.
But still.
Yeah.
So the name,
that's even like Naomi. She's the reason she sends her in there in chapter 3, obviously, like, I mean, she sends her in there is because this is the way we're going to find out where we stand. Who's going to marry you? How we're going to take care of this? We got to do, like you said, a little bit of a, we're going to take a leap of faith and go in there and put you at the feet of the threshing floor and do, you know, do those kinds of things. And it's because I'm trying to understand where we're going, how we're going to get there. And this is the only way I know how to do it right now.
Yep. Yeah, I would have had a lot more questions.
Yeah.
Like, are we sure I'm not going to be seen?
Yeah.
Are we sure that nobody's waiting around the corner? Am I safe? Are we sure he's going to act the way we think he is?
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a lot more questions.
A whole lot of what if in this story, for just sure.
Probably what God's trying to tell me not
to. For me, it would be like, do you think maybe tomorrow night might be better?
I'm a little tired tonight.
I'm just thinking that a Tuesday's better than a Thursday, or you know,
yeah.
He might be in a better mood in a couple nights.
Yeah,
from now.
Yeah.
Next season, maybe.
There's not enough drinks.
How did the harvest go?
Right.
Maybe I don't want to go in there right now.
It's like I saw him on the field. He looked a little put out. I think I'll just wait.
Not the best mood.
Not feeling it.
That would be me. Why do today when you could do tomorrow?
But again, this is why she shows up as, like in the Torah. Like Ruth is right after Proverbs. So you have Proverbs 31 woman, and then you have the book of Ruth.
Yes.
So it's like, here's how to be one, and here is one.
Yeah.
You know?
True. Very true.
So there's a lot to learn from Ruth. I mean, a lot to learn from Ruth. Again, that's speaking to me, not speaking to anybody else. Me. There's a lot I can learn from the way that Ruth follows God and has that faith and follows direction without asking a thousand questions and trusting and all that.
And she's so willing to do, you know, it's like, you know, I know we've already kind of covered this, but, you know, in the beginning when she goes out to glean the wheat, you know, she doesn't wait for someone to tell her to do it. She says, oh, can I do this?
Mm-hmm.
With me, it'd be like, okay, I guess this needs to be done, but you're going with me because if I'm working, you're working. I don't care if you're I can barely move around.
So Obed alone doesn't have like a specific meaning. but it's speculated that Obed was short for Obadiah. So, which means the servant of Yahweh. So it's, you know, I love that, mm-hmm. you know, because then it's like you go straight from that into the genealogy to show how big of a servant he actually was, like how yeah. God blessed that yeah. through his their lineage.
He's got to be a pretty cool cat mm-hmm. to have a nickname.
I mean, and they don't, you know, they don't reference Rahab by name in here. They do Tamar, but you have three women that God specifically redeemed in mm-hmm. Jesus's lineage.
Yeah.
And that are, you know, that, you know, that Matthew mentions in chapter one, like when he goes through, like when he actually mentions the women. So I think that's, it's just, I think it just always shows like how much respect God has for women, for everyone. You know, if you just come to him and you submit and you have faith and you follow him, like Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, those are mm-hmm. three prime examples of what he does when you submit to him.
Yes.
And when you follow his direction and how he will bless you beyond what you thought he could do.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's going to wrap up Ruth for us today. So we thank you guys for sticking with us. I think even we questioned if we could do this in two shows or if we should only have done it in one. But I think we're a little long-winded sometimes and we go a little off track a little bit, but just fine. Cause if we want, this is real life.
Yeah.
And it saves me from editing it. So all of it out, you know, but it's good. I want this whole thing is to literally, cause it's not like if we were all, and this is listeners included, sitting around a table, this wouldn't just be flat straight. Let's just look at this and this only, let's not deviate, but the whole point is to see how we can implement people like Ruth into our own lives.
Yeah.
Any yeah. of the books of the Bible, any of these women, what we can learn and how we can implement that. And then even show examples where we might need that in our own life or where we're actually using it in our own life.
Yeah.
You know, we don't hide things, you know, here. We're real. We are who we are.
Yep. What you see is what you get, or what you hear is what you get.
Yep. You know, and that's how we like it. So, appreciate everybody sticking around with us as we did, you know, as we went through Ruth, and we will see everybody next time. We want to thank you all for listening to the Mustard Seed Podcast and for joining us on this journey that God laid on our hearts. I know it's hard to feel connected when we are on this side of the microphone, so we wanted to make sure that you knew that you could connect with us on Facebook and Instagram at the Mustard Seed Podcast. Our Facebook group is a community. We share funny memes, Bible verses, and just life. You can reach out however you feel comfortable. We want to build the community that we advocate for on this podcast, the Come As You Are. Our table will never be too crowded and cannot get too big. You belong here, and we want to connect with you.